Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Richard's a UK investor and stock picker, so, welcome and, great to speak to you.
Yeah, and you again, Paul. Yeah, it's been great at the moment. So nice sunny weather, sunny markets, sunny everything. So can't complain at all.
I don't want to put any gloom on it, but we've had obviously a lot of volatility over the last 2 or 3 months, not least the sort of like the Trump trade tariffs, the Israel-Iran conflict, Russia-Ukraine, and the UK spending review last week. So putting all that together, what's your sort of like outlook for equities going forward?
Well, I think it looks really good at the moment. I think post the Trump tariff plummet, and sort of since that's happened, I think everybody has suddenly thought, well, that's a buying opportunity at this low, and everybody's steamed back in again. And I fortunately sold out on just ahead of his tariff fall, so that was I dodged a 20% fall there. Well, probably 18% of it or whatever. So I was pretty much all in cash right as the market bottomed, and I bought all back in straight on there. Doesn't always work that well, but I did tell everyone I was doing it before I did it. So it's not an after the event, I'm so clever thing. It was just, I could see it coming. I follow the FTSE World Index, which is the AW01 index, and that showed the big rolling top on that. So I was scared about that at the time. And as soon as I saw that starting to break down, I thought, you know what, I've ignored this too many times, and this is a time not to ignore it. And fortunately, I was out when he created all these mad, his chart with everybody. It was like watching Eurovision Song Contest and Neil Poit, 15% tariffs for this one and this one. And so having got over that, I think the market's got over it. And it's just every day is a school day with Trump in it. You learn something new every time he says something. So, in the market. So, yeah, but I think since then, people have realised that the best place to be is the stock market, and small caps have been doing great. I sort of said about 5 or 6 weeks ago that I thought small caps had bottomed in on my Substack, and it's gone the way I thought. And I think a lot of these funds that have been out in the US and shot off to there to try and make money because they couldn't make money in the UK, I suddenly thought, oh, blimey, we've got too much money in the US and shares are falling in the US and the dollar's working against us as well. And we've made a mistake here. Well, as you know, with Argentex, overconfidence in these funds and they're abroad and it's, oh, this is easy. You make money easily this way. It's nothing like it. And suddenly it comes back to bite you. So now I think they're all trying to buy their way back in the market and driving small caps up where they want to buy and mid caps. To get back into the UK. So I think that's where we're doing okay.
Yeah. What's that indicator sort of like saying at the moment? Because we're heading into that 8th of July date when the 3-month standstill agreement that Trump had put together with the tariffs at 10% before he then chucks them up. And so What does that indicator, and what's your thoughts going into that major potential event on the 8th of July?
Well, yeah, the FTSE World Index, that made a great big rolling top, and then it just made one great big sharp dive of about, you know, 20%.
Yeah.
And since then, it's recovered straight away back up again and made a new recent high just recently. So although you could say the rolling top could carry on still on that basis, it's only just got above its previous high. It looks confident, you know, the way that has bounced back. And when you see these bounce backs, it always surprises me how fast the S&P makes a new high. You know, that drop of 20% on that index was so fast that people who sat on the sidelines trying to buy, they've all bought their way back in again. And you get to the point where you start then feeling you're missing out, you know, as the S&P starts to get near a new high. And if it breaks into a new high, suddenly everybody thinks, oh, we're missing out again, you know. So that whipsaw effect for a lot of investors. A lot of investors, you know, you've got to be on the right side of when these markets move, and everybody's going out at the bottom, and they're all buying too much at the top, and you're on that whipsaw that you can't, you know, you can't sit yourself the other way. So you're buying on the lows and selling on the highs.
You know? Yeah. Well, stay tuned to Richard's weekly Substack, because if that starts to fall over again heading into the 8th, I'll be reading it anyway to get that alert. So at the moment then, what sort of percentage cash do you hold? If you were sort of like 80% in cash before that fall and then you bought back in, where are you now? And also overall then, so what's sort of been your returns at this year today or over the last 12 months? It must be very good.
My cash is about 5% now. I'm nearly fully invested. Yeah. And I think since that Trump fall, I think I'm up about 35%. When it's bounced back about 20, I'm up about 35. But I've had a couple of good ones like Filtronic, and the works has doubled. Filtronic has doubled. I think Staffline's up 50, 60%. And I went heavily into small caps, you know, right at that, on that point when the market bottomed with Trump. That was my move from mid caps to small caps. So I've got rid of a lot of the big mid caps. I've still got some Marks and Spencers, but I've got rid of all the Rolls Royce, a few Marks and Spencers. I'm trying to think in the mid cap range. Looking at them, Dunelm, I've got some Dunelm still, and I bought Prudential as well because that's going up in a bit of a bowl. So there's a few bits there, but mainly the small caps have really been sort of like they've done me proud since that bounce. You know, car closed back in near a new high, and I think Kia Group, that's another one that's having a cracking time hitting new highs. So lots of them are hitting new highs. So
brilliant.
It's about following trends, you know, making sure you follow trends and you're getting charts that are on the direction up and getting rid of these ones that are rolling over. And there's, you know, it gives you momentum in your holdings.
Yeah. Good. Okay, well, let's move to one of your stocks. We've got James. He's asking about Filtronic, which you just talked about as being an absolute moonshot. It sort of specialises in sort of like a communication equipment that goes into defence and satellite technology. Biggest customer is SpaceX, which also owns about 10% of it now. Yeah. And they won an enormous order about 2 weeks ago, about $32 million to increase their FY26 expectations. How do you see this one? And are you going to continue to hold them? I mean, the trend is very strong, but at some point, even the sort of the highest flyer sort of has to take some profits, I guess.
Yeah, no, I've been buying more since the Trump fall and since the spat between Trump and Musk. Yeah. And, you know, the shares dived about 15, 20%.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, do you know what? This spat between Trump and Musk, they both need each other. It's a symbiotic relationship. You know, Musk has put up so much money for Trump. Mm. And Trump is the president of the United States and SpaceX needs him. And Trump needs SpaceX and they need people that are going to be, you know, their technology leaders, and he owes Musk one as much as he's a bit annoyed about what Musk said. Musk has apologised online for a few of the things he said. So it's all, I'm sure that's all going to settle down like everything else settles down. There's a big load of noise with Trump, and then afterwards it all sort of like goes down with Ukraine, and we're in it with Israel now, and you know, the tariffs, so they're going to be 50% tariffs, and suddenly we'll hold off for 3 months and all this jazz. So, you know, I bought more on the dip when that happened. And Filtronic is a great company. They're a world leader in MM wave and RF communication. So on these satellites, that boosts the speed at which things move and reduces the latency. So their satellites produce broadband speeds at three times as fast as what you're going to get through BT high speed, you know, broadband. And so, sorry.
Mid price 122.5. You're having some good fun and games, aren't you?
Yeah. So, on that instance, you know, they've got a world lead. They are the company in the world that leads on this, and there's not much competition either. This was old technology years ago for the mobile phones, and what's happened is it's come around again and been used in a different way, and it can be used for sending signals really fast on this. Low frequency RF minimum wave that they use. The guy that was running the company up until about a year ago was like the global, you know, super brain on RF technology, and it's been used since the technology has been used for since the 70s. I think the Russians bugged one of the US congressmen or something with one of these RF devices in a little bugging device in a present they gave him. So, but they just remind me now, they're just starting to remind me now of Arm Holdings. You know, we had, like, Arm Holdings had the core for the chips, and they got bought out eventually by, who was it, Soft something?
SoftBank.
SoftBank.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was just fantastic UK technology that's just been bought out and gone. And I want to look around now for a listed company that's got that sort of niche market where they're the only company that does such a thing. I look now and I think, well, Filtronic is one of those, and maybe I don't know that it'd be an Arm Holdings, but they're in that sort of niche where they're needed. And SpaceX doesn't go out to other companies for product either. It's all vertically integrated, most of it, but they've had to go out to Filtronic, and having taken 10%, I'm sat there thinking they've increased their supply, they've doubled their factory, their new automated factory, which gives them double the supply. But if they started getting supply constraints, would Musk want to move in and make sure that he bought the company and he'd got the supply that, you know, maybe the European satellite companies would like? So there's that potential bid there from Musk as well. But it's just a great business. And I think if it's been moving lately as if there's some news coming from somewhere.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah.
Trading update, I think their next trading update is about the 20th of June, so we're only a few days away. Yeah. Yeah, that was their trading update last year. So I'm expecting people might just be getting excited ahead of a trading update and all got themselves overexcited. But some volume went through there a couple of weeks ago. So a big bunch of 100,000 size trades. Yeah. So
What portion of your portfolio is Filtronic now, percentage wise?
Just
roughly.
Yeah, probably about 12-13%.
Yeah, okay. And what time did you sort of trim it?
I don't know. Like when I did sell out, you know, when Trump thing, I sold them. You know, like I sold everything, all things I believed in, because I just thought the market was going to fall, and I bought back in what I had and more, and. I don't know, you know, I've just got to sort of, sometimes you've got to sit in there and you've got to say to yourself, this is one of those stocks. You may give
a bag.
But it's one of those stocks where you could possibly 5, 6, 7 bag over the course of time. And then there's that kick yourself moment, you know, when you say, you look back and you say, you know, I've still got Filtronic, but I've only got 10,000 of them now and I had X amount, you know, look back and you think, why didn't I hold? And I've done that so many times, you know, have I got it this time to sit there and hold? And so I'm going to try and sit and hold until I get spooked that much that I decide to take some profits, but how it gets carried away. That's one of those, you don't see many of these.
Yeah.
And the valuation still isn't daft, really. You know, I can sort of see if they can do, they're doing sort of 6 or 7 pence EPS this year. If they could do something like that, or, you know, 5 or 6 what it is this year.
Yeah.
And next year's forecast just look ridiculous because sales are going to double and EPS, their forecast to half.
Yeah.
I just don't see how that's going to happen. You know, it looks like, I don't know what the reason for it is, but perhaps at this trading update, they'll update their earnings go forward. If they, from this year's 5 or 6 pence, if they're doing 9 pence coming year or maybe possibly more, I don't know. there's that chance that you sort of think these sort of things rated on peers of 20, 30, 40 when, you know, I think just because they've only got SpaceX as a major customer, the rating maybe isn't as high as it could be. But now they're starting to pick up other car, you know, Leonardo and you know, the other ones out there that they're doing the aerospace, Airbus. Yes. Their other clients, now they're getting more European clients as well, and globally, then the risk is spreading, so the PE ratio could rise. So,
good. Okay, well, let's move sectors. Let's go into the one you've mentioned. We've got Kier, which is in sort of like construction and civil contracting. I think they're benefiting from AMP8, the water infrastructure, also for the electrification, putting in sort of like, you know, all the EVs and stuff like this in terms of being able to connect offshore wind into the grid. Also, specialist construction, big, obviously, spending bill last week in terms of rail and social housing, which they should benefit. And Costain's also, one of its competitors, came out with a good solid trading update this morning, I think, or yesterday. So, what's your sort of view on Kier now?
They've got a lot of HS2 around here as well, Buckinghamshire and all that way. The HS2, they're doing a lot of the HS2 for that. And Morgan Sindall today, they come out with a trading update saying that was significantly ahead.
Yeah.
So to add to Costain. So they're all that sort of sector, really, the construction sector. And Labour look like they just want to spend everybody's money for the next 10 years on construction and hopefully trigger some growth in the economy. And a lot of it's been the talk at the moment, but these contracts are going to start running out. I did hear that they've got another contract, £50 or £60 million contract yesterday. I can't remember.
Yeah, sizable season, another one, isn't it? It's going to be.
Yeah, they've got a lot. They've got so much. And the guy who runs it, Andrew Carter, I think his name is, the CEO, isn't it? And he's full of confidence. And they've got the debt. They've dropped their debt from which was like £400 million down to their net debt down from £400 million to next to flat. They'll be. Yeah. This year, so it's been one of those turnaround companies that fantastic bowl. I bought them what 60-70 pence, they've doubled, over that course of time. And the chart is just starting to make new eyes, and it's constant new eyes, you know. And I've just said they're going to increase their margins. I think they said,
from 4 to 4.5%
to 4 to 4.5%. So you know, if you're growing your margins and they're seeing contracts come through at the current rate, that's what you want, then you want growing sales and growing margins. That's the holy grail. And they look like they've got it. But the whole sector is Galliford Try, I think. And, you know, you can sort of say all of that sector that construction, so nobody wanted a year or two ago, no one wanted to touch it because, you know, margins were so small and they're always getting it for, added costs and stuff like that, and they've all changed their business model, and it's inflation plus or whatever. And now, so great little stock, I think, and they're in 6-year high. Last week, so
yeah, and they're still trading at just over 8x PE, and they've got little debt. So you're right, they're definitely cheap. And I think that even though the whole sector's gone up, it's still overall by institutions underowned because people are just scared, you know, about what's happened in the past.
And these institutions are all the same, aren't they? You know, like a year or two ago, no one wanted to touch them. And then once they start to rise and they watch one or two other institutions going, they're herd creatures, aren't they? They all want to join. They all want to have someone hold their hand. And once one starts, they all do it. And then once they all three start bigging it up, they're all bigging it up. And then... So you want to be in ahead of the funds. Take some time to buy positions as well. So they're in there.
Yeah.
They're trying to build position. They ain't going to get a big position in Kier that quick. Yeah. Not while they're doing buybacks as well. So
it's a very good analogy because they're a bit like buffaloes, aren't they? They all pile out and then they all pile in again. Yeah. They sort of migrate in and out.
Broker forecasts are the same. You know, when the market's high, brokers are adding out valuations, and then suddenly once one broker says no, actually the emperor's got no clothes. And then suddenly they all say, oh, yeah, he's naked, sort of, and they all reverse.
Yeah, you're right. But if you're right, if you're a trader, you can actually, or, you know, you see that coming, then, you know, you can benefit from it. And
especially smaller guys, you know, you haven't got to buy, you know, most guys are probably buying a few grand's worth or 10, 15, 50 grand's worth or whatever. It's no difficulty getting a position like that. Mm. You know, these funds have got to buy £1 million worth, you know, multi-million pounds worth of positions. It's going to take them weeks, months maybe to get the position they want. And you can just sit in there and get in the head of them and just ride on their coattails. So,
yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, it's finding those targets where they're going to herd, where they're going to migrate.
Next, yeah.
I know, yeah. Okay, we've got Philip. He's asking about in that same sector, Watkin Jones, which does purpose-built student accommodation and build to rent. Used to be an absolute darling. Now gone through a bit of a tough patch. I think they've got some cladding issues and building safety issues they need to pay for. How do you see this one? Again, it could be on the cusp of a good turnaround, but equally, it could still be a bit challenged. What's your view?
Yeah. Well, they've had a big decline for a long while, and then they changed. They got a new CEO moved up from COO.
Yeah, and, Alex Peace.
Yeah, and Simon Jones is the new FD.
Yeah,
and they've changed the business model so that they go in and they actually buy the plot of land, get the development planning on it, and then they go out to companies like property funds and say, look, you know, we've got this land, we can develop it. What do you want developed? You know, we can develop it for you. You pay the cost of the developing it. We'll do the development. And at the end of it, we'll split the profits between us as well. So it's a very capital-like business in that as soon as they've bought it and got the planning and they sell that off to somebody, then it's cash generative all the way. So the cash generation has been fantastic recently. And I think they're... last time I looked, about 80, 85 million, almost the market cap in cash. But they have got some remedial problems which from the cladding, which is going to add up to about 30 or 40 million pounds of that cash is earmarked for that. Having said that, they've developed their own side of the business now. They've got Fresh and Refresh.
Fresh and Refresh.
Yeah, they've got Fresh and Refresh. And I can never quite remember which one's which. I should have two totally different names so I can keep... this part, but one does all this cladding stuff as part of refurbishment of these buildings.
And that must be Refresh.
Yeah, and now they're going out to other companies as well and doing it for them.
Yes.
So they're making a little small business out of it as well on top. And these companies have come to them and said, you know, you've made a cracking job with this one. We bought a few, you know, how about doing this one as well? Or we've got a few more. So there's that to them. Interest rates, they said, is what will benefit the most once interest rates come down. These properties are far more attractive compared to buying into fixed interest for these funds. So that would help them a lot if interest rates come down. The one little bugbear is that the Labour government have set up a lot of new regulations about with the cladding that they had and everything else. They've introduced some more regulations, hoops and hurdles that these companies have to jump through, and it started to slow the sector down a bit. Right. And so I think they were a little bit more cautious on their forecasts at the last set of results and guided that, you know, as if their earnings might slip back possibly into the next
year. They're lumpy orders, aren't they?
It's the problem. They've got big lumpy orders. So, you know, you have a fantastic couple of months and then things are quiet. And so... you can look on the quiet few months and spook yourself and think, oh, I'd get no business. But that's just the natural flow of things. So, but I think it's one of these companies that is trading cheaply at the moment. If they start doing their 4 PEP earnings a year and they carry on generating the sort of cash they're generating, then I think they're a cheap business. And it's one of those ones you can see. If Alex Peace knows what he's doing, then it's a new board there. That's one of the things you definitely need, you know, a bit of change, catalyst to get things going. And Simon Jones, the FD, seems to be a real true guy. So he's changed the cash situation there. Great. So I don't think it's any at risk. It's just how fast are they going to grow and how soon are the orders going to come through and how lumpy will they be?
Yeah, good.
Looks cheap here to me. Looks cheap.
Good. Okay, we'll switch sectors. We've got Stephen Cahill. He's asking about Lyam Trust, another one which is extremely cheap, fund manager. I was just looking at the numbers, and I mean, I can't believe it. I'm sure they're going to cut it, but 19% dividend yield, apparently, and a 7.5% PE with a shed load of cash on the balance sheet. But obviously, they've been losing assets under management like at a fair clip over the last 3 or 4 years. They're an active retail fund manager, i.e. they do actives rather than passives, which hasn't been the place to be. And I think they've lacked a bit of differentiation. But what are you seeing in this one, Richard?
Well, the directors bought a load of shares, you know, just at the, I think, towards the beginning of the year.
£250,000
worth and so, and there was another £100,000 worth. And, you know, and they confidently said, you know, they can continue to pay that dividend until October, they're confident at least to beyond October this year. And you sort of think the market is feels like it's turning now. And if they start seeing inflows rather than outflows, and they can maintain that dividend, you sort of, in your mind, you think it's, what is it? I don't know what the yield is now, but it's something like...
It's 19%.
19% now. You sort of
only.
It doesn't seem like a company, you know, these dividends, what ends up happening is they come out and they say, you know, we're going to halve the dividend and stuff like that. And you sort of think, oh, that's better. But when they do that, it would still be a good yield. 10% would be a good yield if they halve the dividend. And will it do it? Will they maintain, if they maintain a dividend, it'll be fantastic because people will be piling in. They're like, no one's business. If the stock market goes up, you're getting capital gain and you're getting a 20% yield,
which
will rapidly decline as the share price rockets, I would think. That's if they maintain that dividend. It all is about that. It's about will they maintain that dividend? And if they cut it, how much will they cut it by?
Yeah.
And will they start to see inflows soon? And I've bought on the basis that the directors put a lot of money in it and they seem confident. They could be completely stupid, and in which case I will be completely stupid as well.
Yeah.
But it's one of those, I haven't got a massive amount of them in there, but it's one of those that you just think to yourself, the chart looks like it's making a bomb. And I want to be there, you know, just because I've seen it and I don't want to sit there and say, I saw that and I let it go.
Yeah, I did look at their last trading update or their last results, and I think most of their funds actually over the last 5 years have been pretty poor performers, actually.
Yeah.
So I think that's what they really need to turn to, then start attracting fresh money. And the brand is damaged, but not broken, in my view. Yeah. I mean, Lion Trust is well-respected still in the industry, but it needs to change its performance. And I think if you've got a fresh management who can actually deliver the returns in their active, I mean, it's a stock picker's market. You've demonstrated that if you're an active stock picker, you can do well over the long term, short term, and that's what these guys. They need you, Richard, basically.
No, I wouldn't want to be dealing in those sizes, trying to get in our great big positions that these people have. Mine are tough enough.
At times. Okay, we've got AL8, basically asking about. It's a new company listed. It's very small. It's called Urns. I don't know if you've ever looked at it. It basically does servicing of residential boilers and heating and stuff like that for housing associations. I think it's a bit like Mears. He says the CEO is a new guy called Bob Holt, who actually set up Mears.
Oh, so Mears.
And I think they've just done a placing and they've just raised a bit of money to buy a business in this particular sector. So it's going to be a buy and build strategy, still steps fairly early. Market cap's only about 4 or 5 million. I don't know if you've ever had a look at this. I'm guessing you probably haven't. It seemed too small for us two, I think.
What's the ticker again, Paul?
The ticker is Earn. It's EARN. I'll put the chart up in a moment, just when I can find it. I've never looked at it myself, but it's. I think you're probably backing Bob, who I do know, as you say, it did very well, didn't he? Out of Mears.
Volume 60.2%.
Got it. Yeah. So, yeah, they've been around for about 3 years now, three or 4 years, and I've never looked at them. The chart's fallen right way down, but there's a big volume spike just recently. I see that. I haven't looked at them, but Bob Holt, I think he's a bit of a love-hate figure. I think
he's a couple
of businesses he's been in. Mears, he did extremely well, but there's been another couple of companies he's around. I think there's his son involved as well now these days, I think, mate. But
right, possibly. Okay.
Yeah. But that's probably what would drive it if Bob Holt's there. He's got a bit of a following. He's getting on a bit now, though, I would have thought so.
Yeah, I think AL, you're betting on Bob basically because it's still early days.
If he can repeat his Mears, 4 pence when I first looked at Mears, I bought them about 9 pence.
Yeah.
I think I sold them about one of my great ones. I think I made about sevenfold on them and sold them, but they went up even more. You know,
yeah,
I could have had so many times more from those. So that Mears was a cracking buy when Bob Holt took over, but there's a couple of other things he's been in, I think, which haven't done so well. So it's whether you're you love him or hate him. But well, yeah,
possibly, yeah, I think he was in, he was the chairman of Totally, and I think also he was in chairman of Revolution Beauty, I think, as well.
Yeah, that's where he was, Revolution Beauty, I think.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, we've got a question from Invest the Rest with Beth. So Beth, she's asking about Future Group. She says the PE is 5 with strong cash generation. Future for Everybody is a price comparison website that owns, I think it's, I can't remember which one it was, Go Compare, I think it is, and has then got a lot of sort of like specialist online real estate like Marie Claire and some financial ones out in the States and some tech ones as well. Gone through the real mill recently. How do you see this one at all? Have you ever had a look at it?
Well, look at it. Tim bagged it. I think I had it.
Oh, did you? Oh, God, sorry. Okay.
I bought at 10 pence and then they had a consolidation to a pound.
Yeah.
So, and then I think I sold it about 18 quid a couple of years later.
Oh, and, well done.
Zilla, Bing Thorne. And yeah. Everyone calls it Godzilla. And yeah. She did so well there, and she's gone across the Trustpilot, which is sort of like a similar business in a way that they're not publishing, but they're doing consumer sentiment really. I think the problem for them is going to be with AI. I think AI is probably going to affect them a lot.
Yeah,
and all these companies, and do they use it and put it to good use and gain from it, or do they find the competition from it too difficult? Mm. I think a lot of these reviews and stuff like that, because that's what Future does. They do these like camera reviews, and then you see the camera, you get the review, and there's the click through, and they make their money. Will AI do a better review or a cheaper review and everything for them all? So like Reach and all these ones that are trying to get click throughs. It may become harder, but you know, I think that's probably what the market's looking at now. You know, in all honesty, I thought when they got to like a PE of 8, you know, when they went up to 18 quid after I'd sold them, you know, when I sold, I just thought that was easy to talk. They went on to about 28 quid, I think, before they came back down again. So I sold even too soon on that, but that was a fantastic, fantastic ride at the time.
Yeah.
And, it looked like it was going to be a really good company, but then Zilla Bing Thorne decided she wanted to go somewhere else, and it looked like she'd enjoyed, she knew when to get in and get out, and so I think she had something to do with Auto Trader as well, and now this. So I don't know what the new management's like. I've not looked at them since, but I keep looking at the shares and I can't be attracted back into it. I think sometimes don't go out with old girlfriends. It's never the same second time
around. Or boyfriends. There's not
been. Yeah, or boyfriends.
But it comes. I think it comes back to your herd mentality. But when it hit over 30 quid 4 or 5 years ago, everybody was locked down in the pandemic and thinking online digital reviews was just going to be continued forever and do really well. So the valuation was a lot higher. Now that AI has been released, which was sort of the back end of 22 with ChatGPT, the big problem you get, in my view, it is not only the reviews, but also the removal of a lot of the blue links on Google. And if you've got a lot of your traffic, which is basically being generated from search, then okay, you're gonna have a moment in the dark, I think, and you've got to get through that. And if the management team has got a strategy to avoid getting hit by the loss of traffic from the likes of Google, then they should do well. But that's going to be a major, major issue for them, no doubt about it.
I think there's better places now. You know, I think there's, you know, don't try and, it's never really good to hope to relive a great time again. You know, the original concerts, ELO concerts were always the best, you know, and if you watch one now, it's probably not going to be as good as it was before with Jeff Lynne and whatever. So.
Good point. Okay, let's move to another one.
I threw a Brummy band in there for you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, I liked the yellow. They were good. Okay, let's move to another sector. We've got a potential turnaround. Is Carclough. I know we talked about it last time, just sort of a precision components on a contract manufacturer for lots of OEMs, sells them into life sciences and defense and all these kind of, and it seems the shares have done pretty well actually over the last year. So they don't owe you anything, I don't think, Richard.
No, they've got a nice bowl on that chart as well as a cracking. There's two bowls, a long-term long-term and short-term. You know, they've made a good for. They've got the new CEO in there, Frank Doornbusch, of a couple of years ago, and he's got rid of one of the factories out in the US, the Tucson, and it's all manufactured out in Philadelphia, I think it is, Philadelphia. Yeah. So that's cut massive amount of costs, but a lot of those cost savings won't kick in till this year. So, and they've recently said that they've reduced their debt from, I think it was 29 million to 19 million. So they reduced their debt by a third. They said earnings were out of forecast. And this is one of those companies, you know, what were they? They were 180 pence, I think about 5 or 6 years ago. And they were doing 12p earnings a share.
Yeah.
And there's been little to no share dilution at all in that time. The only thing they've got is a pension deficit, which is quite large, about 40 million now, I think it is. But that has come down from about 60 million recently.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're actually going to start producing their own products. They're designing their own products now because he sort of understands that if you've got your own products, you've got margins.
Yes.
So they're just making stuff for everybody else. So they're going to have their own branded products. And once they start doing that as well, it could be really seriously interesting. So the CTP division does all the intro drug stuff, you know, like the plastics for COVID, the testers and things like that we're doing. And then they've got a specialist division for aerospace and optics where they can create a lot greater margins, I think, and do a lot of their own products. So they're just currently in about a 3.5 year high, I think it is.
Mm.
And results are out, I think, in the end of June. It could be the end of June. They used to be the end of June, the results.
Mm.
And the last couple of years, it's been July. But I think with Frank in there now, you know, and he's got the – when companies get their act together, the results date starts to get earlier when results are better, don't they? And when companies are not doing bad, the results date tends to go back and slip, and they don't, you know, they don't really want to get it out.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see earlier results dates come out as well if you get it. So I think, you know, there's the potential there to get back to 12 pence EPS quite easily. And because there's been no dilution, and their debt is what it was back then when they were doing 12 pence EPS as well. It's only the pension deficit that's the little kicker there. But as they get bigger, that pension deficit becomes a smaller issue.
Mm.
So I think it's a really possibly great turnaround company, but we'll see, you know, once
will they need to raise any more money at all to basically continue to invest in their product line, because presumably their debt or their cash generation is going to be used to solve the pension deficit.
They just refinanced just
right, okay.
Just what, 3 or 4 months ago, two or 3 months ago, and so that secures their funding for the next few years. So whether they do later on just, you know, have a small funding, but I don't think they want to do a funding it down here with the share price this low. I think you can get the share price a lot lower before they maybe have a little placing or something like that. But, you know, I think if they did that, the market would like it and start seeing this back to where it was. It was a great company before they bought YPAC. And this is ancient history, but about 20 odd years ago, and that was a disaster. They bought it and for a high price and sold it for a tiddly price, I think. So,
yeah, that was the car lamps, I think, business.
Yeah. But I think Frank Doornbusch really seems to be, you know, the previous guy, Nick Saunders, was the previous CEO, and he came in. I think he was the right hand man to John Moulton at Alchemy Partners.
Yeah.
And he seemed like he was a real deal. He'd come from the right place for turnarounds, but he struggled. And he brought in Frank Doornbusch and Hutchinson as non-executive directors, and now they've taken over as finance director. Hutchinson has just gone down. They've brought in Takayas from Czar. So yeah. he's got a good team there. The chairman, him, and the finance director, and I think Frank Doornbusch is the real deal, really. So we'll see. But everything he's done this time has been good, you know, compared to what Saunders talked the talk and overpromised. Well, one of the actual things he said, Doornbusch, is this company needs to stop overpromising and under-delivering. He said it's done it for too long. So having said that, I really hope that, you know, now he's going to demonstrate that now, and he's under-promising and over-delivering in scale, hopefully.
So. Good. Okay, let's move sectors. We've got Gordon. He's asking about Creighton's, which is basically a personal products, cosmetics, sort of contract manufacturer. And it's quite interesting because obviously you talked about the Carclo moving up into its own products. But Creighton seems to be selling us still a lot of third-party supermarket brands and sort of making for other third parties, other OEMs. It does its owner stuff as well. How do you see this one?
They do white label, they do contract manufacturing, and they do their own product. And this company was going great. And they had a guy in there, Bernard Johnson, who was the CEO, and he had a mad moment and started, you know, he was actually getting overconfident and telling people on that they were going to get to these huge sales levels and we were going to acquire because it got cash. It was like a swan song. He was getting on a bit, him and his McElvoy, the chairman. And they went out and bought this Emma Hardy for a ridiculous valuation and spent a fortune on it. And they've had to write that all down straight away. And another company they bought as well weren't so bad, the acquisition. Anyway, long and short of it was he had to walk after that because it was just that it was a disaster. And the girl that's been there all the time, she came from Potter and Moore, I think they were called, down in Devon.
And she Philippa Clark.
Yeah, that's it, Philippa Clark. She's all along, she really has been like the front face the public from the I mean, when they do the meetings, she'll be there at the front telling all the details. You can see she's all over the business. So they've closed the factory, they've ended their shifts, their night shifts, so they've reduced the wage bill, and they've taken production lines and broke them apart and made their own new production lines out of old production lines to keep the cost down. And sure enough, they reinstated the divvy last year, which was, you know, everyone questioned and said, really, you know, you sure you're going to do, you're not doing that too early, but incredibly confident. And they came out with good H1 earnings. And I think this year they'll possibly do 1.6 pence the earnings they did in the first half. I wouldn't be surprised if they do a good 2p in the second half, which is their better half. And we'll have another dividend again this year. And I think she's running it really well, the business. And you know, cosmetics industry, war paint has been a darling of the cosmetics industry. I think Revolution Beauty has been an absolute nightmare. And Crichton sits somewhere in between where they're actually not trying to be the big IM brand. They do a few small brands of their own. They've got Emma Hardy, which could be something eventually. And they've got a few other, Feather and Down, I think, is another one of theirs. And so they make some good money on their own brands, and they sell them direct out through either Amazon, and they've got Tesco's and a few other big supermarkets. They sell their own brands through, but then they make stuff for those brands, those companies as well, under their own brand name. And they look like they got overvalued on Emma Hardy. They took a real beating and went down too cheap on the punishment for Emma Hardy going wrong. But now with Pippa in charge, I think you're probably going to see a decent turnaround here. Directors have been buying recently, and that's nice to see. And the CFO got promoted to the board recently, so they're obviously happy with what the CFO is doing there. You know, he seems to be a good guy who's done quite well. So all the bits are there. It's just a matter of waiting for the trading statement, which will probably be in the next month or two, probably next month, I think it is. But yeah, I think it's another one of those great little small cap recovery plays. No dilution, and you just wait for the earnings to come back, and everyone suddenly to get excited again. And Me likes them, so that's always a good recommend.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with that business model of making contract manufacturing for us, your supermarkets, another third, but the sort of role model has been the turnaround is at McBride's, which does it in sort of like detergents and a bit in sort of personal products and stuff like that. Okay,
you mentioned quite similar to McBride in many ways, just that one's makeup and the others. Yeah, it was like home cleaning stuff and that.
Yeah, good. We got just on one we mentioned. We got Carcosa. He's asking about Warpaint, that did actually cosmetics brand that did actually come out with a revenue warning today, reduced like-for-like sales in Q2. It saw particular softness, I think, in the US. Profits it's managed to hold because of margin expansion. But just, any quick thoughts on that one? He says the sparkle seems to have gone out of it a bit.
Yeah, I haven't got as many as I did have. I did have quite a lot of these, but I haven't got many really. What they said today, you know, the US, the sales in the US wasn't as strong as they'd hoped due to the tariff, a bit of tariff. And that's where their growth was going to come from. And then they said earnings will be weighted to H2. And nobody likes hearing that. When you hear their earnings will be even more weighted to H2. Everyone sort of says, are they too scared to tell you that they're not going to make their numbers? Today, they're off a bit this morning. I saw they come off 20 or 25 pence or something this morning on the news. I did think people wouldn't be overexcited by what they said. I think, bizarrely, the CEO is a shrewd guy. You know, where they've got to so far has been good. Maybe the rating is probably up with it at the moment, and you need to see a bit more growth for the rating to be able to re-rate any further than this.
Yeah, it's about 15 times PE.
Yeah, and it's come down from where it was because it was trading up around nearly the 30s. So it's got a better rating now.
I guess the question is do you hold this one if you own it, or do you basically decide actually this is the first of perhaps a few tougher trading updates?
I think probably reduce. Luckily I've already reduced, so I'm down to a volume that won't matter too much.
Yeah.
So I can say that. But I think probably if I was holding a lot this morning, I would have probably gradually reduced through the day to get down to just because it might have made me a little bit insecure to hold too many. But I like the company and I think they're good. Yeah. And I think if they can get the US growth and the tariffs don't hurt them too much. And they've said their margins are going to be higher actually. So in all fairness, you know, that's a good sign as well. Yeah. And you may be sort of being too gloomy here.
Yeah.
But I think it's still a decent hold at the moment.
Okay, we've got a couple of broader questions. We've got Terry Quigley. He's asking about how you create your watch list, stock watch list. And then on top of that, we've got Edward Hardy. He's asking about whether you use level two at all for your bowl, you're doing the bowls and when you get in and out. So first of all, how do you create your stock watch list? What's the sort of the criteria on it?
Right, I've got I'm after recovery plays mostly. So the things I want to see is a new directors, new board or board changes or some catalyst actually getting the thing to change. I want to see a chart that looks like it's bottomed or bottoming. And then I'm looking for companies to sound a little bit more optimistic. They're less pessimistic. They haven't got to sound optimistic.
Yeah.
Just a little less pessimistic.
Yeah.
And that's the point at which I think probably I want to be a buyer, but I'll track companies. As soon as I see a board change, I'll probably make up a stock list of companies that have got board changes going on and that have been bombed out and they're on their way down and they've got board changes. And then I'll keep watching that watch list and waiting to see the director buying come in and see the chart starting to bottom and then see them sounding less pessimistic. And then once you get all those, you're sort of in that point where the chart's going to probably turn and turn up and you've got the catalyst for a recovery play. Yeah. So, and then once I've seen those, some of those will move up onto my buy list and at that point and become part of the portfolio. So that's the way I do that. And it's a matter of watching the RNSs, watching that for companies that have got changes going. And even companies that, you know, you wouldn't touch with a barge pole, they get a directed board change, that a new board can change the complete direction. It can become a different company.
Yeah.
So that's what you need. Bad directors don't become good directors. So you want new directors in there that hopefully have done it before, got a good track record. And so that's how I make my list up. And
do you use level two? Also, do you use level two, which was Edward's?
Yeah, I've got level two. It's, I don't find it awfully useful, to be honest, these days. It used to be great. I had level two when it was first available to private investors, probably 25 years ago, pro quotes. Came out and I had level two on that and just understand. And it was fantastic. You know, I could watch level two, see it starting to move, go and buy some shares with Lloyds, and then just wait. And then I could sell it in the afternoon because I could already see the shares starting to move. But today, a lot of the sets and level two doesn't give you a genuine guide to what's going on because there's all these, what they call them, icebergs and snake in the grass things that these market makers get up to. What is actually going on? So it's good to see. It's good to see watch the trades going through live, and you can see, you know, now and then you see a lump of big trades go through at a price above market, and that sort of says to me, oh, you know, there's something going on there. Pay a bit of attention. So.
Okay.
No, so I'm not overly dependent on level two, but it's handy to have, and it comes with share pad, so have it.
Yeah, we've got a question that Mr. and Mrs. Greenspout, they're asking about one risky stock called Wood Group. And the question is, do you think the institutions would back a possible offer for 35p? She says it's been a complete mess in terms of, I think it does contracting for oil and gas, and the balance sheet's been totally hit. And they had an offer, didn't they, about 2 years ago at about 160?
It dragged on. And,
Sadara, is that Sadara is the one who was interested?
I don't know. In actual fact, once it's got down to about 50p, I walked away and didn't want to look at it again. I looked at it a couple of times and got stunned. And I just walked away. And in all honesty, when you're sitting there relying on a bid, I'd sooner find somewhere else, to be honest. If you struggle to get a bid at 35 pence all that time, you know, why hasn't somebody else moved in and outbid them, or, you know, had a rattle after them again? And I just think, there's better faith. When the market's moving elsewhere and you get one baggers in a few weeks, why do I want to be in Wood hoping that there might be a bid to get there? I just, you know, look around and see, are you investing in the right place, really, for where you are? You know, there's loads of opportunities out there. The last 3 years, it was difficult because the AIM market was falling and the UK market. But over the last, since January, there's loads of places where you can find stocks that are going ahead, and you can waste your time waiting forever for a bid. It's like waiting for Godot.
Okay. In that same vein, the same context then, because there's the same issue, but not quite as risky, is Ben Sharman. He's asking about Capita, whether you've had a look at that one recently. Basically an outsourcer, largely to, I think it's 50% public services, does a lot of contact centres, and then the other 50% is into corporate. It's got some big contracts, actually. I think it does the electronic tagging, the data on it, not the actual tagging for prisoners. And it's got the congestion charge and IT system, sold off a few things. The shares have recovered a bit, but they're still long-term pretty much down. Anyway, I don't know if you've had a look at this one for Ben at all.
It's Richard Stavely you should be talking to, I think. Richard Stavely.
Yeah, he's the guy, isn't he? Yeah.
I did buy a few at one point because he was saying that there's some of the parts there.
Yeah.
So large that, you know, they could sell off a few bits, and they got a new CFO in there, and he did announce one or two deals were sold off. But the chart looks, let me just have a look again, because
here's the chart. It's all downhill basically.
Yeah.
And then if you want a nearer term, it's that one, which is it's basically tracked the rebound in small caps.
Yeah. You know, there was that first little bowl back there at the beginning of 2025 where it looked like it was going to go and it didn't, and that gave way, and it's done it again and gave way. The trend just recently has been pretty interesting, but these big conglomerates are too difficult to get your head around and know just what these parts are worth. It could very well have something in there that's really worth a lot more than we all think, and they could sell it off at a decent valuation and the shares would go. But I get bored too quickly in stuff like this. You know, it's all, I like to see stuff that I fully understand and it's all going on. And conglomerates, you know, great if you get someone really good who can go in there and break them all up and carpet bag them and everything else. But I think it's a game probably, in all honesty.
I would say to Ben, you know, have a look at what AI's done, and they're definitely benefiting a bit because they're putting in agentic AI into their services, which I think they're lifting and shifting from the Salesforce software they're using. So they're going to help customers, and that should improve the quality of their business. But they don't own that. That's the problem. So it's all longer term. Do you actually, you know, is AI going to benefit them? And the answer to that is yes, in terms of quality of services and reducing their cost base in call centers. Yeah. But it could get to the stage whereby actually it replaces them and it reduces pricing because other people offer those services, and therefore you've got an infinite supply, even though you've got higher demand. So it's basically, to me, it's really your own call about whether it's a long term, and that's really what the market's saying. It's still a sort of wait, you know, a show me story, I think.
Yeah, and you know, all over the places. Well, you know, sometimes season tickets at the Emirates, and I went there and Capita's doing the food at the Emirates and stuff like that, you know, and the staffing, and I'm there, you know, it's all over the place, trying to have a guy manage a business that's got so much stuff in all different directions.
Yeah.
I struggle to be able to get my head around it. It might be a really good investment, but for me on my own, you know, I need a team to sit there and go through it and come, report back to me and tell me everything about it. I just don't have the time to do that when there's other opportunities that are far easier to get your head around.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Okay, good. Let's go to one you have got your head around and been a really good winner of late, The Works, which is basically a shop that sells affordable products on the high street. Shares have just taken off over the last 2 months. What's the story behind this one, and is it going to continue? Because the trend is definitely your friend at the moment.
Well, I tell you, this company I watched from when they first floated in about 2018. And that was, you know, I've made money, I've lost money, I've done all sorts with it. It's been up and down, hot and cold. They got a new CEO in Gavin Peck, and I watched that. And then about 2 years ago, 18 months ago, Kelso took a stake. And a few people say, oh, Kelso in there, they've bought a stake in there. And I sort of was interested. I thought, yeah, this could be good. But how fast will things actually happen? And I've just kept watching ever since and kept watching. Anyway, so they've had a bunch of directors go in there and buy stakes. And all big city guys. They've got a guy, Graham Coulthard, who he's bought 7.4%. He's a former, he's a retired private equity partner and private investor. Hudson Management have bought 17%. There's a guy called Mike Burns who's bought 5.7%. Kelso's bought 6.4%.
Yeah.
And altogether, they've got 38. They've bought about 34% of the company.
Yeah.
And they've got in there, and Kelso walked in and said, you know, we want a couple of places on the board. And I think the rest of these guys backed Kelso to go in there and do all this. And they were on the board for several months, and then they came out and said, oh, I've got the quote here. It says, we joined the Works board on a temporary basis to provide additional guidance as the business underwent a period of change. Since then, significant progress has been made, namely transferring from the main market to AIM and strengthening the leadership team. We're content to step down now, knowing that the company is on the path to growth and with full confidence in the management team. Well, they put a new chairman in there, and he kept buying shares recently, 100,000 here, 100,000 there. He's bought 700,000 shares. And I kept watching, and I stuck in my Substack about 4 weeks ago and said, you know, watch out for the results because I think these could be interesting. They came out and said the results are well ahead. They're going to do 9.5 million EBITDA this year, which is up 3.5 million on last year.
Yeah.
They've absorbed all the wage rises from the minimum wage rise. And they've said we're going to make even higher profits next year despite a 6 million hit from National Insurance.
Yeah.
And I sort of think if you've got that much momentum behind you now, you're, you know, to be able to absorb those hits and still grow your profits, you've got some momentum. So these guys went in and they've changed all the, they've got a completely new different model for the business now where they're concentrating on doing stuff for families to get your kids off the computer. And it's all games, crafting and books.
Yeah.
That keep you can have games with your family at night on a Saturday night. So it's all the family playing a board game or in the garden. The games playing in the garden, little, you know,
tennis or something like that.
Yeah, they throw the sticky balls on the targets and bubble machines and everything. Basically, everything to get kids off the screen and doing decent stuff, fun stuff. They've They've said they're going to get EBITDA margins to 6% at least. They've said they're going to grow sales 100 million in the next 5 years at least, which would be on top of the current sales of 277 million at the moment, getting to 370. And they've got a market cap of 27 million.
Yeah.
So they're a tenth of sales. So you just get your margins up. You've got that much sales. Yeah. You just get your margins up. And
it's going to be possible to get your margin because they've got 2% operating margins. And I would doubt they'd have huge pricing power, but can they get the margins up through better efficiencies? That's the idea.
Well, yeah, I think the website for one is they're called works.co.uk.
Yeah.
And the .co.uk has been a nonsense because they only do 10% online. It doesn't seem to have grown at all in all that time.
Yeah.
And so the guys they've got in there, one of them is... one of the guys, Stephen Bellamy, the chairman. He comes from a finance and due diligence, business.
Yeah.
That's what he's done all his life, financial due diligence. So he's a nice guy to have in there. They've got Simon Hathaway, who's a retail guy who set up Tesco's Subway thing in Seoul and a link with Samsung. And he runs, I think it's called the Marketing Society.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other directors in there, and they've all got niches that are relevant to the works and being an online retailer as well as a retailer. And so they've said they're going to change the online website. They've done that in fairness to them. When you go on there, it's really quick. And they compete with the likes of, well, the books they sell, they do it like with Amazon. I think Clarkson's Diddley Squat book on there, the hardback, is 11 quid on Amazon. It's a fiver with the works.
Right.
And they do the paperbacks. Billy Connolly's one is, I think it's something like 7 quid on Amazon. It's about £3.50 on at the works. No, 6 quid on Amazon, £3.50 at the works. And you can get 3 books for £7.50 on Amazon, all decent books like that. So they're undercutting Amazon on books in a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Other times it's a bit sort of they're both nearly on a par.
Yeah. What's the brand? What's the brand values? I mean, is it basically like a treasure hunt? You go into the store and you find something that is really going to intrigue you, and you buy it. Is that what draws people in? It's a sort of like a treasure hunt type of stuff.
Well, I think the problem is it hasn't drawn people in. I spoke to loads of people and they say, oh, we've got works near us. I say, you ever go in there? No.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. People don't go in there. They look at the store and see it there and they don't go in there. But they've said they're going to, what they're actually going to do is increase the brand fame. So brand awareness, basically, and make people aware of not just what the brand, there's a brand called The Works, but what they actually do. And yeah.
And what do they? I mean, are they supposed their USP on the high street is it basically it's to attract? It's like a treasure hunt. Is that the whole idea?
It's basically three main sectors. There's toys and games for kids.
Yeah.
So it would be one of their targets. Books.
Yeah.
And crafting materials.
Right.
So I go in there because I'm a bit of an artist. People always said I'm a bit of an artist, to be honest. So
was that a compliment?
Yeah. So, but I go in there, you know, I like a bit of painting. They sell canvases and brushes and stuff like that, all at a very good price.
Okay.
There'll be books that they do. The problem is I don't think they've ever used the store footprint very well. Funnily enough, the guy that floated these was Dean Hoyle, who's the chairman of Huddersfield Town. And he also started Card Factory. And so they're both similar type of businesses in a way. You know, they're sort of targeting low cost, easy stuff to sort of sell. Mm-hmm. And Card Factory, they changed the complete layouts of their stores because the stores were never laid out in a way that used the footprint well.
Yeah.
And I think Works have identified that as well. When you go in there, it's a bit of a, you sort of feel you're wandering around the place a bit. It's not big enough to be a maze, but there's not aisles. They're sort of like you're around here and you creep around this corner. You don't see stuff. You don't bother going there because it looks a bit of a... They need to get the stores laid out. So they're doing that and they're getting out and they're going to increase the awareness of the brand and what they do. And in all honesty, they've done it because, you know, the profits have turned around this one, and they're ever so confident. It won't surprise me if they reinstate a divvy soon, at least a token divvy anyway. Their cash was up from 1.6 million last year to 4 million, I think, this year.
That's right.
So that's going the right way, and the results are out, I think, the 22nd of July. And I think with the right people in there, they've bought 38%. These big investors have bought 38%. They're not going to be selling into the market when they want to get out, are they, with 38% of the works? They must have a pre-planned exit strategy.
Yeah.
So they know what they're going to do with this, and it's going to be a trade sale of some sort at the end of it. They're going to have get the business, get it really rocking and rolling, and then say to someone, look, this is an ideal bolt-on, you know, it's up for sale. And someone like, possibly Car Factory, maybe Car Factory might want to get involved in something else at that time, because they do a lot of little cheap goods as well as cars, but something like that. And, you know, what they've gone in, they've all bought around about 35 pence level. The shares are 50p now. So they haven't made a fortune at the moment. They must be expecting the shares to go higher before they actually sell out, quite a way higher. And they sound very confident. So will it be another, you know, like over the last 7 years, Gavin Peck come in there and it has all been a disappointment? Or will they get all the bells and whistles and it becomes another tie rack or body shop or something where everyone gets excited about it and you sell out at multiples higher? I don't know. I think there's possibly it's going to go quite a bit higher than this. So I've got quite a big hold in this one.
Okay, good luck with that. Okay. Another one in the same sort of vein, in terms of turnaround, been through some real sort of like troubled times, is Staffline, the recruiter, blue collars it recruits, largely in sort of factories and engineering. Its temp business is doing well at the moment. How do you see this one? The shares have done extremely well over the last 5 months, actually, and the fact they've almost tripled.
Followed them for ages, and they just kept going down and down and down. And
yeah.
In spite of Henry Spain, like Henry Spain have bought a huge percentage. I think I can't remember what their percentage is.
Who are they? Who are they? Are they private equity or
investment managers? So it's just for almost one to one. You know, people are not even that wealthy. You haven't got to be that wealthy to invest with them, but they've got a good following. Apparently, I think they've had a good investment history, and they went steaming in on these, and I kept looking, and they, in fairness to them, they've kept buying and they've kept their confidence and they've kept buying more and more shares, and they got a new board in there. And finally this week, a few weeks back, they announced a big contract win. It was going to transform their earnings. The forecasts have gone up way up. I think they're probably guiding conservatively and not over-promising this time. And they look pretty cheap to me still, if all goes well.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, they provide staff for when you get the Christmas rush and Tesco's needs, like, you know, 5,000 temporary staff. Mm. They've got those 5,000 temporary staff just like that. And they seem to have got some, you know, quite a good reputation for getting these staff and people at the right time.
Yeah.
And they used to do a lot of fruit pickers and all that stuff. I think way back, real temporary cash, almost gangbuster type stuff. But yeah, I think the business has changed, and well done Henry Spain for sticking with it, you know, and buying a real big stake. And I've been waiting for the right point to buy in, and the contract win seemed to be the right point. So I've bought back in recently. So
yeah,
on that contract news. So good. Wasn't that smart? So early. I was a tad late, but...
Yeah, okay. All right, well, we've been going for more than an hour. I asked all my experts at the end of the the interview what their favourite stock is for the next sort of 12 months, maybe the one we've talked about or another one you quite fancy just highlighting as an idea, total idea for people to run the slider all over.
I think the works would be the most exciting one, I find. You know, yeah. I think... The works and Filtronic are both very exciting stuff that could do extremely well. An outsider might be Churchill China.
Oh, okay, yeah,
yeah.
That's basically they do ceramics, don't they, for the food service industry?
Restaurants and that. And you know, these restaurants, when they have refits, they have to. It's all a big rush, isn't it? You know, they have.
Yeah.
They, And if it's a chain comes in and they want all the China, they'll quite a bit of stock Churchill China, so they can supply rapidly. They don't make their China in China. They make the China in Britain. So it's a British-based company, the potteries. And the shares have become quite bombed out recently.
Yeah.
But the trading updates are pretty good, and they sound quite confident. One of the things is the price of energy, because, you know, all that, when you're making pottery, you've got all that energy costs, but the price of gas has come down about 20% over the last few months. So, and the way they were talking about having their energy costs controlled in one of their notes, and I sort of got the feeling that they sound like they're doing better than they're trying to say. And the last recent statement was, you know, it was sort of like, we're doing this, but there's that. And it was good, bad. But they ended the note on a very sort of like positive note. And I think this is one of those ones that's bombed out that much. And lately, there was some huge buying in there. So I don't know, probably weren't, like I say, one of these funds that's come back from America or something like that and trying to build a stake in small caps. And, you know, Churchill China has been a real good long-term investment over time. I watched it originally when, do you remember John Harvey Jones, Troubleshooter?
On BBC? Oh, yes, I do. Yeah, Harvey Jones, yeah.
One of the first companies he went to was the Ropers, Churchill China. And okay. They were in absolute disarray. You know, they weren't making new patterns, and he tore the company apart, and they didn't want to listen to him. And in the end, he was right. And nearly all the Ropers have sold out. I think there's one Roper left in there now. And they've got the company running like clockwork and finely tuned machine. But of course, we've had Ukraine and other bits that put energy prices up, which spooked everyone. I think they've got that one under control now. I think that could be one that I'd say could surprise people.
Yeah, they make good margins actually, 10%. I was looking at it, and they traded about 12 and a half, no, about 11, just under 11 times PE. So they're still pretty cheap actually.
Yeah. So I bought a stake in those. I quite like that as a
6% dividend yield as well, which is
one coming in.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, thanks very much, Richard, for all those insights and comments. Thanks everyone for your questions, and very much look forward in hearing how things progress in about 3 months' time. So, thanks again, Richard.
Nice to see you, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand, and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, pay later, and all major cards, so you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.